meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you for joining IDN Guidelines Working Group call on 13th of July 2017. We have Mats, Dennis, Edmund, Carl, and Samad on the call. So over to you, Edmund.
Thank you, Samad. I guess, as I was saying before the recording started, today we've wrapped up the going through the comments, and we're looking at starting to go through the actual recommendation, well, the actual report or the document itself, and trying to add back the comments in. Thank you so much, Samad, for preparing this document that has already incorporated at least comments into where certain aspects needs to be put in. So I guess we'll just walk through it as such. Any thoughts, suggestions before we get going with this plan? Seeing none, I guess we'll move forward ahead. So the introduction, the suggestion is to, in terms of the scope, there is immediately a note actually from that to connect with Patrick and Essac to get the feedback. If I recall correctly, this is about whether this pertains the whole zone in cases where non-standard names are being used as name servers or child hosts, for example, whether this document should be within the scope or not for this. Am I correct? Looking to Mats or Samad or others.
That was the issue.
So there was a short conversation over email with Patrick on this. He understands the issue and seems like there is no specific, clear cut or specific note from the SAC on this. They may be planning to do additional work on it, but not sure. I was able to actually talk to Jim Galvin during the ICANN meetings in Johannesburg as well. His view is that the ESSEC, the latest report, especially the ESSEC report on the emoji domains, even though it does not specifically touch on this, he feels that the interpretation of which should allow us here to actually say that within the zone, the integrity of the entire zone served by the TLD should be of concern for registries, and also should be part of what we recommend. So I bring this up. I don't know whether we want to discuss it immediately here, or we want to actually invite ESSEC to talk together with us. I see Matt's hand up already. Matt.
Yeah, it's quite complex because the delegation is not fully in the zone. You're not authoritative of the NS records. So if you point out some other names, the name servers, are they within the zone? Are they covered by what Jim Galvin meant? Or are they outside of the zone? Yes.
I guess, to be honest, I think Jim's answer was, we kind of missed that. But we can twist this and say it covers it. That's the reality of which, and yes, I understand, Matt. I agree very much. That's precisely the problem. I see Cal's hand up as well. So, Cal?
Yeah, and I'm thinking about the way we've discussed this already on a couple of weeks ago when we first came up. I think the only way to push this forward is for someone, and maybe that is the asset, to actually come up with some language that they feel adequately describes what they think is the scope or the limitation and the concerns. Because there is a risk if we use loose language that is perhaps imprecise, it has the reverse effect. So I think we all have our hearts in the right places. I'm not sure that we all have a way of articulating it in a way that's useful. And so I think the only way to drive this forward is to get someone who knows what they're talking about to put some words on electronic paper. And even if we don't go with that, even if we debate that text, at least we'll have something a little bit more concrete to discuss. I feel the conversation just feels a little bit too vague and high level to be useful for editing this document.
Thank you, Carl. I'll go to Samad and then I'll put myself in the queue as well. Samad?
Thank you, Edmund. I would probably want to separate it in this discussion into two discrete steps. I guess the first question is that whether this is in scope or not. And I guess if it is in scope, then I guess we can take the next step on how do we address it. And so I think just trying to raise that question, you know, is this really in our scope? And how we, you know, what do we think about it?
Sedman, good point, Samad. And that's precisely, actually, you were just saying exactly what I wanted to say. We need to first figure out whether this is in scope or not. And the other part is that I think the key question we probably ask ourselves first, I shouldn't say it's a key question. The easy maybe the hardest question let's try to ask the question, do we think registry should allow name servers with non-standard domains or not? And the scope part that ties into this is whether we consider those IDNs. And I think what is definitely in scope is what we say about what are IDNs. If we say that anything that is interpreted in the zone file as xn-dat starting with xn-dash-dash falls within IDNs, then yes, this falls within IDN. I think, you know, that's our definition. And if it's not, then maybe we have to specify what we mean by IDNs, and then the scope question perhaps can be resolved in that way. Samad?
Thank you. So I guess another question to ask in that particular context, so suppose if it is IDNs, would the scope be limited to second level, or can we go deeper?
Yeah, good questions. So Matt and then Cal.
Well, I think that we cannot go beyond what is added in the zone. I mean, we could say that glue records and the name in the name server and in the NS record, they are within. But our scope cannot go further down than that. But if we say that it's anything in the zone and it's delegated to something which is 3 or 4 or 5 steps down, then indirectly, we cover that name on that level. But I'm hesitating. Yes? Edmund, go on.
Please go ahead and complete your...
Right. I hesitate that we should put the scope beyond the name that you register.
Okay. So I think it sounds pretty clear, and that's definitely, you know, anything that's outside of the immediate zone that's served by the TLD is definitely out of scope. I think that's a good clear cut. But then we have a less clear cut, which is whether, you know, the name servers, if it's down not the second level or whatever level that's being registered, then that's certainly the gray area that we're talking about. Cal?
Sorry, I was going to say something similar to Matt's insofar as we limit the scope of to registered domains. And I think the interpretation or the text in the registry agreement is something like the level at which the registry operator sells domains, something like that, because your way, you know, the zone file itself might be several actual zones if you've got, if you're selling it a second level or something like that. So in terms of the language that we would use, we might want to borrow that registry agreement language, just so that it's consistent. Insofar as name servers, I think they are different objects in registries. They are not registered names, so they'll have different logic. You aren't matching them against a repertoire. You're not running them through the same sort of checks as a domain name. So for the actual name server objects that you'll potentially be used for delegation, I think, in my opinion, it should be out of scope. But I don't feel very strongly about that, and I'd be willing to listen to a counter argument.
Thank you, Carl. Personally, I think I'm just adding to the conversation. I'm currently somewhat undecided, but I think we shouldn't take this lightly. I think it will be a growing question and problem. So perhaps we really should try to organize a more a live session with ESSAC and Patrick and Jim potentially, and invite them to a meeting focus on this specific issue. Do you think that seems like a good approach? If so, we'll try to organize that. Cal?
It just occurred to me that one of the, I guess the risk that you might place people in is when you enable a poorly named name server to resolve. So it may be that we simply end up placing a restriction on what can and can't have glue. External name server, one that you don't provide glue for, we're not making the problem worse if we accept a name server that way with those additional characters or outside of scope characters, so long as we are not offering any kind of glue and definitely not any authoritative response for it. But bearing in mind that it wouldn't be registerable, so it would have to be at the very least one level below what the zone file is answering for, we're not making the problem worse if we allow them. but we might be if you accept Glue for those sorts of names. So perhaps there is some caveat in the way we allow people to accept it.
So just to clarify, you mean to distinguish between the out-of-zone name servers that have a different TLD, versus child hosts created within the TLD that Glue records are published in the zone as well. Is that what you're pointing to?
Yeah, and there are some registries that for out-of-zone hosts, they will actually publish Glue information. Most name servers will ignore that anyway, but there are some that with old implementations, they will do that. Obviously, if it's in zone, it's generally okay, although if obviously if you're you might have to have a bit of logic for Glue records that are immediately below the child and to which the child is actually delegated. So there may be a little bit more detail required in something like that. But I think my attitude would be to not make the problem worse, but not to try and prevent people from using those name servers out of hand, because there might be implementations that work under some circumstances.
Understood. Yeah, thanks for the clarification. Matt? Matt? You are still on mute if you're trying to...
Yeah, speak. I'm sorry. When it comes to work, I suspect that few, if any, name servers will have a problem with a name which is non-IDN lined. So I don't think it will break DNS as a transport protocol. And if we put restrictions on it, we may have to think it should be put the same restrictions on those names. There are several levels. Is it okay to have something which is something dash dash? I mean, it's colliding with the IDN 2008 protocol, but it won't be interpreted as IDN. Is it okay to have X and dash dash and then something which is not valid Unicode? Okay. Is it okay to have X and dash dash valid A label, which when you interpret that, it will contain disallowed code points? And the third level is it okay to have something which only contains p-valid code points, but break some of the rules that we state here, maybe some contextual rules or something? So there are several levels, and if we have restrictions, it's not apparent that we should have the same restrictions on those names, which actually belongs to a different zone, a lower level zone, than this one. Well, it could be actually another TLD. Yeah.
Right. So I guess the question is, are we comfortable in making a recommendation as we're sort of leaning towards a particular direction? trying to paraphrase and summarize that in general, what is Glue record that within the zone and have Glue records is within scope of what we're talking about. And if it is the case for the registered domains, then the rules for the compliance of IDNA and all that is what we recommend. If it is out of zone, then we just take it as is, if you will. Are we comfortable in actually making that recommendation, or do we want to seek further response from others? I see Matt's comment saying, you know, we could try to have a meeting with Patrick and Jim. Matt, you have your hand up.
I'm not uncomfortable of having restrictions, but I don't think that there's a risk that if we have such restrictions on the name service, that there's a will be a focus that these guidelines try to control too much, and the purpose of the guidelines get missed. So I think it's better to be focused on what is the real concern, and I think that is the registered name. These guidelines would not be able to control other things on the third level. If someone creates a name for a web server which violates these guidelines or even violates IDN standards, we cannot control that because that's out of control by the TLD registry.
So that's well understood, and I think that, as I said, I think it seems like the group is kind of leaning towards that direction as well. We should try to invite Patrick and Jim, and perhaps explain to them our view and the issue itself. And to get their feedback on it as we proceed. Samad?
I'm just wondering if we are going in that direction. It's whether it's also useful to have a similar discussion with the registry's stakeholder group. To see whether, you know, how they feel about this scope discussion, I guess, in case we are going beyond registered names.
Thank you so much. I guess let's start with inviting SEC and Patrick, Jim, and to our next meeting or the, you know, whichever week they would be able to join us. If the time is not workable, then we'll try to find a special time for the meeting. We should start from there. And if we limit the scope as the direction that we have, it should be less, my feeling is that it would be less of a, concern for registries. But if we expand the scope a little bit more, if we're asked to expand the scope a little bit more, then we should further engage the registry guys, I think. Does that probably make sense for others as well? I see Cal typing, but you can also speak. Matt, you have your hand up?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't think that the registry is having any problems if we limit the scope to the registered names. Yeah. So then we don't have stuff with them. Then a more like ESAC discussion.
Right. Okay, Cal?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I think because the registry group is a much broader group, I would only seek to engage them if it basically requires a fair amount of context explanation and I guess retraining or communication just to get them up to speed. So I'd only do that if we were expanding the scope rather than, you know, retaining it as is, because it will incur quite a procedural burden on all of us, I think, once we bring them into the fold.
Yeah, agreed. And I think we are agreed. So for that also means for introduction and the discussion here, we put it on hold. We'll try to invite Patrick and Jim and whoever else from SAC interested to join our meeting next time or earliest convenience, I guess. All right? Yes, then we move to the second bubble, the 1.1.
Anything else? Just before that, would you want me to reach out to SAC and try to coordinate this with the relevant staff there? Or would you want to just directly reach out to Patrick?
Now, if you could help us coordinate and invite them, that would be useful. And if you can do a better job than me in describing the issue more concisely for them, that would be even more useful, because it took a little bit back and forth before we got the actual question directly across.
Right. So what I'll do is I will add links and point them to the comment made by Nick Chili, and then request them to just see if they are available to join, if that works.
That's good. All right. Max?
I'm not sure that is enough context for SAC. We should explain to them that we are considering the two options. One is to put restrictions on anything put in. Another option is to only have restrictions on the registered name. And also that we have discussed when it comes to the restrictions on anything that could be on different levels. I think that context is needed. Otherwise, I don't think that they will understand why we reach out to them. Or do they?
Yeah, I agree. So not just the pointer to Nick Chili's comment, but also describing the actual item that we're considering.
Okay.
Thanks. So moving to 1.1, seems like a simple thing. We just remove the entire thing, or do we need to add any definitions? Matt?
Yes, definitely. If we remove the reference to RFC 2119, then we need to define these words. If we just want to have some normal meaning of it, then I don't think we should capitalize the words in the guidelines, but I think it could make sense to define them more or less in the same type of definition that RSC 2119 has.
Okay, this is Edmund. I actually think maybe an easier approach is just not to capitalize anything and treat it as a normal description. I guess the normal English language understanding of it. Unless that creates more ambiguity, then it solves the problem. So, because I think if we try to, define it, we're going to get awfully close to what the RFC says. Cal?
I don't have the registry agreement in front of me, but I was wondering if that had any similar definitions or common usages, because for those, this length's most important for contracted parties. A CCTLD is free to interpret it as they wish, and if they do or do not follow a recommendation that has should, then there's probably no penalty for them other than something associated with the functioning of the registry. With a contracted party not following something that has should in front of it or should not and contradicting that, it may have implications from a compliance point of view. And I think while I accept the comment regarding 2119, this was originally provided so that we could provide certainty for people implementing these guidelines, that they could judge themselves whether they were compliant or not. And I'm comfortable with the natural, with the normal English usage of the terms, but I would hate a situation where it is still unclear what a compliant or non-compliant system contains. Oh, I see that Dennis has made a comment. So it doesn't. So Dennis, are you saying that it does have definitions for should? Or are there any definitions?
Dennis, do you want to?
Yeah. So no. I think the registry agreement uses all those three terms: must, should, and may. I'm sure about the must, because we take those as a mandatory requirement and should and may just as a recommendation. But the point is that there is no definition of those terms. We just use them as the natural meaning in the English language, right? Must is mandatory. You have to do it. That is a compliance issue if you do not, whereas the should and may are optional.
Thank you. And I guess back to Cal's point then, so removing this and just relying on the English language should not add additional ambiguity to the RA then, if it is already designed that way.
If I could sort of just interject on that, I suppose we would have to have a look at the occasions where should and may appear in our document, and I can't off the top of my head actually think of when we have used those. I suppose it's up to us then to assess whether our recommendations are clear, or at least clear enough to others who are not part of this working group to understand what a compliance system looks like. So if we're not going to define them, then we should at least make sure that where we have used those words, the interpretation is as clear as we can make it.
Understood. I see Matt's note saying then if we do take this direction, then the whole guidelines shouldn't have those capitalized must, should, must not, and those things. And yes, so if it works, perhaps tentatively, we should remove 1.1 and use the words as English intended. And as we go through, every time we hit that, we should have a note to say, let's think through this. It's now no longer have a specific definition, as Cal mentioned, and perhaps that's the approach we can take. Tentatively remove 1.1, and as we hit those, we just be more alert. But Matt, I see your hand.
Yeah, I mean, we've never used must capitalized anyway in the document.
Okay, then if there is no problem, then I guess tentatively remove 1.1, and unless we hit a point where it becomes we require a definition on these terms, we'll revisit. Cal?
I just wanted to point out that must is probably the one that is not at risk of being misunderstood. So there's no harm in capitalizing or not capitalizing that, because I think it's a well understood invitation. I think the riskier recommendations are those that contain, and I don't know whether we've written any, contain may, should not, anywhere where the interpretation is not strict. So those are the ones that would have a concern if we've done so in any of the guidelines. If we haven't, then it's not an issue, I suppose.
Yeah. So let's keep going, and then once we hit those, we'll come back and see whether we need to add back anything. In fact, shall would be the most ambiguous one, because in English language, shall could mean must. So, in fact, in some legal documents, shall means must. Matt?
We don't use shall, I think. I agree with Carla that we should look at should and should not. Because that is what it would be most hard to interpret, what it really means. I mean, the meaning of should in the RFC 2119 is more strict, I think, than the most common use of should in English. Do you agree?
That is probably.
Paul is the only native speaker, I think.
So Cal says yes, and yes, I think I agree with that as well. It's a more restrictive or more teeth to should than normally.
And I think that we want that. So there could be a reason to then define should.
I'm sorry, Max. I want to make sure whether you were suggesting that we do define should here, or we should go through the text and then decide.
We should go through the text, but I think that, well, I know that the meaning of should has been the stronger one when we have discussed the recommendations.
Okay. So I guess
I think we need a definition of should. We could maybe get rid of the other ones, but just have a definition of should.
What about the Samad? I see your hand up, but let me just take this note. What about this? We take away 1.1, and if Samad, you can help us dig up the RC 2119 definition for should, and tentatively put it there, and saying that we might revisit and add the definition for should or should not. And we can go from there. Perhaps that. I don't know whether that makes sense. But Samad, you were going to say something.
Yes, I was going to suggest something slightly different. And that is that if it's, I think we're all probably suggesting that may and must are clear, so we don't need to worry about them. Should is probably the more problematic one. And in 2.9, it says that should is something which is recommended. So what I was going to suggest was that we don't really use should in the document, and wherever we are really using should, we replace that by saying that it is recommended that, you know, that this should be done, or, you know, that we do this. So we don't really use should and really use recommended as a verb. And that will clarify the use of should. So that's one way of doing it. Other, of course, option is to just say should and then define that should mean should is equal to, you know, a recommendation, which is, you know, more than optional, which is the may. Thank you.
Thank you. Maps, you have a response?
I don't have the RFC in front of me, but as I recall it, should means that this is something you must do unless you have some good reasons not to do it, isn't it?
So I put the definition of should in the chat box.
Right. So this is
both of you are correct.
This is stronger than the normal meaning of recommended. The normal recommended is weaker than this. So I don't think that we solve the problem by using recommended instead.
Okay. Perhaps, I guess it's hard to say, but let's I think it's really better to look at the actual examples and come back. But anyway, Carl.
I'd actually agree with Matt in that the 2119 interpretation of should is, in fact, much stronger. And I also speak from personal experience from a compliance point of view, where discussing on a completely different technological topic, but discussing the interpretation of should versus must. And the ICANN compliance point of view at that time was that they would interpret the circumstances around a should if you chose not to implement what it discussed, rather than it being a purely optional choice on behalf of the registry operator. And I stress it was a very different topic, but it was clear that the interpretation of should was a much more, there had to be a very good reason. And I think that the explanation or the definition that 2119 has probably over time been strengthened in people's minds. So if that is the interpretation that we want to go for, that is that basically you must do something unless you have a very good reason not to, then we would not say recommended. We would reword that in a much stronger term. So, and I did just do a quick check of where we have used should. And I think we've used it in both a weak and a strong sense throughout the document. So we certainly couldn't do a word replace, in my opinion. It would be inappropriate for whichever definition we would went for. We will have to tailor our language in a different way, I feel.
Okay. I think we're all in agreement. Generally, we would remove this. Should is the case where we might want to come back and see if we need to define better after we finalize the text, as we finalize the text. So does that, I guess we tentatively remove this, and I guess we could put the should definition right there as a tentative placeholder for that section, and then move on to the text. Does that work? Okay. Seeing no objection to it, let's move to the next one. 2.1. Pretty simple edit, just to add and their successes to the RFCs. I don't think is there anything we need to talk about? Oh, Samad.
Sorry, I just want to go back to 1.1, just since I'm going to be editing this document. You are saying that then we remove the text but keep 1.1 and tentatively add the definition of should? Is that what we need to do, or we need to just remove 1.1 completely at this time and add back the definition of should in case we need to later on?
Okay. I guess the suggestion is remove 1.1 inside text and then add the should, what you posted to the chat, or definition of should to the comment, and says, to be revisited. I think that
okay.
That should be clear enough for us. Okay, so 2.1, paragraph 1, last part, just to add the and their successes. Matt?
Well, for me, successes means RFCs replacing those RFCs, but it might be RFCs that updates those RFCs. Is that included in successors? I don't think so. So I think that we should have something which says defined in the standard track RFCs, and list them. And any future RFCs that replaces or updates these RFCs, or something like that.
I am fine with that. Anyone else have any thoughts? I think at least for the idea, I think it works. Sama, do you have it and can edit, or do we need Matt?
I think
it
would be good if Matt can just suggest some text in the chat box, I think.
Okay, either chat box or later in the email, Matt.
Sure.
But that, I guess, is the extent. Anything else on paragraph 1? Seeing none. Paragraph 2. Overlap with number 5. Please go to number 5. Okay. Registration of a domain name that is no longer supported, notified, and there may be unanticipated consequences for a user attempting to reach it, and such domain names should be placed, held, or deleted at registry initiative. And in 5, we were saying that pre-existing. Okay. Is it correct to say that when we discussed it, this highlighted part should be removed, and if there is any part that is not clear in 5, we should add it back? If so, then for paragraph 2, we just need to remove the highlighted part. Does that make sense?
Do we need an update of 5 to incorporate something which is here in number 2?
I guess we can do that when we get to 5. We're just shortly getting to 5 anyway. But I think for 2 itself, then we could just I guess the suggestion is just to remove. Sorry, my mouse is kind of stuck. Just for 2 itself, to just remove this, and when we get to 5, we make sure that what is included here is not lost there.
I suggest that we kind of move it to 5 as a some text, and so we incorporate it there. Maybe that's what
sounds
we mean.
Good. Yeah, sounds good. So in terms of the edit, we just move this highlighted part into 5, and so that when we do talk about 5, then we will see we will consolidate the two. Seems like that's reasonable. If nothing else, we'll keep going ahead. Next one, there's no particular thing on number 3. And I'm just paying attention to whether should happens anywhere. If it does, then please bring it up. I see must there, but I don't see should in number 3, so I'll just keep forging ahead to the next highlighted one. Samad?
Yes, I'm sorry, I'm going to take you back a bit.
It's okay.
So I'm just looking at the text which Matt's just put in the chat box, which says, or any RFC that replaces or updates the listed RFCs. So this only allows for two options, replacing and updating, but it doesn't allow for adding. Succeeds perhaps also has that reading, at least to me, I was going to suggest if it would be better to have something like or any RFC that succeeds or updates the listed RFCs or something like that, to have that third option as well. Something to think about. Thank you.
But isn't updating? Doesn't updating include adding? Or what do you mean by adding?
So, for example, if there's another RFC, that would not be an update, right? That update to me would mean you just change the existing RFC. Do not add a fourth one or fifth one.
This is Edmund. Actually, I don't think so. I think update and replace actually captures that meaning in my mind. You know, there could be an additional RFC that updates something that doesn't replace it. I think that's consistent with what Matt has in mind. Although I'm indifferent whether we use replace or succeed. To me, it kind of means similar thing.
So, okay, okay with that, then we can keep this. That's not an issue.
If you think about what it says in the RFCs, it has obsoletes. Maybe you should use those terms. Obsoletes and updates. Isn't it that those terms that they use?
From what I recall, yes, those are the terms, but I'm not sure whether those are definitively the entire set of what could be listed. So perhaps, Samad, if on this specific issue, if you could just do a little bit of research on you know how it's usually described, we can use a similar terminology. Well, actually, we could use the same terminology.
Okay, I'll see if I can try to find that vocabulary. Thank you.
Okay. We have 2 minutes left in the hour, and there's a very short change in number 4. Normally, hyphens in both these positions. I don't think there's anything we need to talk about. We can accept it and just add the both. Matt?
Well, it's still ambiguous. Because it doesn't, with both, it doesn't say that they have to be there at the same time, which is the situation. So to be non-ambiguous, we should have a rephrasing of it.
Okay. Can I call upon you to make that suggestion? I think at least in principle, the idea is to make it clear, and it's, you know, dash dash in the third and fourth that we want to talk about.
Right.
If you, perhaps I'll take it as an action item, you help us draft something and send to the list for
yes.
next week.
Yes.
Perfect. With that, I guess there would be probably more discussion for number five as we are moving parts of number two here, and we only have a minute to go, so perhaps this is a good time to draw a line. Matt, is that an old hand or okay? With that, we are at the top of the hour. Anything else before we close? So next week, if we do get Patrick and Jim and other guys from ESSEC, we could jump back right to the top of the first question. If not, we'll continue from number five. Anything bring up? If not, thank you for your time and talk to you all again next week. Bye.
Thank you very much, all
thank
of you.
You.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.